We are less than a month away from the biggest World Cup ever, right here in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. I'm Heath Pierce, former U.S. men's national team player with stops in the Bundesliga, MLS, Denmark, and Sweden. And I'm also the host of Orange Slices, sponsored by FanDuel Predicts. Orange Slices is the place to bring your World Cup memories to life. The people, the moments, and the stories that don't always make the highlight reel, but help shape everything we love about this game. Think of it as your soccer hang all summer long. Listen to Orange Slices wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome on into another episode of the Baseball Insiders. I am Robert Murray, joined here by fan-sided extraordinaire Cody Williams. Love him to death. And he's also running a half marathon in Norway in a couple weeks, or in a week, which is freaking awesome. Cody Williams, are you excited about it? Are you excited about baseball? Are you excited to be on this podcast here with me today?
I am certainly most excited to be here, be back with you. Bert, you're one of my favorite people. Love talking ball with you. Excited to challenge myself. This is my first half marathon, doing it across the pond in Norway, which I'm excited for Norway. Running sucks. We've talked about this before. Not a big fan of it. I used to run cross country back in the day, and I think I got my fill back then. And nowadays, like, would much rather be in the gym. Baseball, you know, as a Red Sox fan, it's not been going great.
No, not going great at all. We'll be talking plenty about the Red Sox here today, of course, but we'll be talking a bunch of different things across baseball. And you can also catch both of our work here on fansided.com. You can see us in the Baseball Insiders newsletter. We do that a couple times a week. Some really good stuff from the Fansided team. You can see me in the Discord. I do a weekly Q&A every Thursday from 3 Eastern to 3:30 Eastern. We're also doing a giveaway with Louisville Slugger, where you just need to tell us why you fell in love with baseball. What made you fall in love with it? And it's a really cool thing where they fly you out for two, give you a hotel stay, can get a VIP tour of the Louisville Slugger facilities. Extremely cool opportunity. And the runner-up in that sweepstakes wins a Ronald Acuna Jr. signed bat. So really cool overall. I love it. So I'm excited to dive in the ball. I've been looking at this rundown all morning, Cody Williams. I've been up since 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm not kidding you. This entire week I've been up at either 2 or 3. I don't know why, but I think trade season kind of slowly heating up. So I'm excited to break it all down. Are you ready, amigo? What do we think?
Dude, let's do it, man. The adrenaline's already pumping. That's what we'd like to hear.
Oh, damn straight, baby. All right, let's get after it. The Boston Red Sox, as you said, that's your team. Mm-hmm. Things have not been going so hot. And we've seen some people high up in that organization do their radio hits, and they've been very critical of this team. They've called the season an embarrassment, said this is not up to standard whatsoever, and obviously rightfully so. The season's been a mess. Losing managers. And then you also have rumors that Craig Breslow is on the hot seat. But they put cold water on that. They said he's not on the hot seat. But for Breslow's sake, do you think he should be on the hot seat? Like, where do you stand with this?
How could you not have him on the hot seat? This, everything that is happening right now is his vision. Like, and when Alex Cora was fired, I wrote something for fansided.com basically saying, yes, Craig Breslow is, you know, trying to pull levers to, you know, make something happen with this team that had been underperforming at that time, obviously, as well. And in doing so, he put the pressure on himself. Chad Tracy's the interim manager. He was down in Worcester earlier in the season. Like, there's no pressure on Chad Tracy. The pressure is on Craig Breslow. And while I can understand where, you know, the executives Sam Kennedy and John Henry are coming from when they speak about Craig Breslow having job security, yeah, I don't understand how you can go into this trade deadline confidently with how this roster's been built. Because God knows you came into this past offseason with a lot of opportunity after making the playoffs last year, seemingly being on the up and up. And now you've regressed, honestly, to where you're worse than you were in 24. You're worse than you were in 23. Like, we are not in a good place. And then on top of that, you're allowing Craig Breslow to handle the trade deadline when his two big trade deadline moves in 24, the Red Sox needed a right-handed bat. We ended up with Danny Jansen. Not exactly the right-handed bat we're looking for in that scenario. In 25, you needed some pitching reinforcements. Joe Ryan seemed like there was some smoke there. You're going to get that. Craig Breslow couldn't get that deal done. You ended up with Dustin May trading James Tibbs, who you had already traded Ralph. Like, how are you entrusting this man to work another trade deadline? I don't know how you go into this and not think that he's on the hot seat and that the trade deadline is probably determining his fate if it's not already decided.
No, I think that's spot on. And what initially, like, obviously this season and how it's played out immediately raises alarm bells, especially without Alex Cora getting fired. But then you have Jared Carrabas, who is super tied in. And we all saw the clip of him where he was asking about his security and if he's there for the trade deadline. And you wonder what he knows, because he's very clued in. He was the guy that initially got the Alex Cora firing, and among many others there in Boston. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, obviously there's some smoke there that he's hearing. So based on what he's saying, I know there's a report saying that he's not on the hot seat, but it makes you think he absolutely is. And he absolutely should be. What you said is spot on in the fact that obviously the Devers trade, the return actually in hindsight was good. And then Kyle Harrison looks like an absolute stud. Mm-hmm. Obviously had the clunker against the A's, but otherwise he's been great. James Tibbs had a strong start to the season where I remember last year, and I'll give you some behind the scenes. I found out that Tibbs was being traded to the Dodgers. And I remember at that point, May was already it was already reported that he was going to the Red Sox. And I'm thinking to myself, is there a separate trade here? And then I asked him, is he part of the May or is it something separate? And they said, no, he's part of the May deal. And I was thinking, holy cow, that felt like a big value. And the fact that he's given up Tibbs, he's given up Kyle Harrison, he's given up Quinn Priester, and all these guys have succeeded elsewhere. But you brought some of these guys in, Caleb Durbin, others, and they've struggled. It makes you wonder what exactly is going on there in Boston. So I think he's absolutely worthy of being on the hot seat. Usually I try to calm those rumors, but I think at this point he deserves to be on the hot seat. But I also think, too, we need to continue to let this play out, see exactly how it goes. But everything that he's done so far is not – it's they're not in a good spot, and that's putting it very lightly.
No, and I mean, the return for Devers on the whole – in hindsight, you're right, it does look good, except the piece that the Red Sox and Craig Breslow really wanted, because they wanted him in free agency as well, was Jordan Hicks. They were excited to get Jordan Hicks in the building, and I cannot describe to you how frustrating of a experience that was watching Jordan Hicks pitch in Boston, because it was god-awful.
Oh, and then they immediately ship him to the Chicago White Sox in the offseason, and it felt like a team that, they had a vision with what they wanted to do after they got rid of Devers. And it just never panned out. The return, they shipped those guys out way too early. They had so many I've said this so many times in this podcast, but they had so much available funds where they could have gotten a Schwarber. They could have re-signed Bregman. Obviously, he hasn't looked the player that he's been previously. But still, you had the opportunity to sign an impact bat. You bring in Wilson Contreras. And shoot, even if they're out of the contention this year, do they move a guy like Contreras? I don't know, but – it's something that I think teams are going to explore, but it's just overall, it's a disaster as far as what's going on in Boston. What felt like a disaster, but is no longer a disaster. Tarik Skubal and the Detroit Tigers. He underwent elbow surgery. Somehow 5 weeks later, he's returning here for the Detroit Tigers. What do you expect from his return? And what does this exactly change here for the Detroit Tigers and also Skubal as well?
So, what I expect, I mean, obviously when he starts on Saturday, I expect it to be probably a shorter outing than we're probably used to expecting from Tarik Skubal. You don't want to rush him back into this, but I think that plays into my larger point when it comes to all this. I expect Tarik Skubal to be Tarik Skubal. I expect the Tigers to still be a pretty sub-mediocre baseball team, because that's kind of what they've proven to be, particularly offensive. You're just not seeing the same Tigers team that we saw a year ago. And frankly, I think Skubal is a competitor. That's reason one why he's coming back. But reason two is because the Tigers are we're not going to stop you, because we want to trade you and we want you to showcase your value. And I truly feel like this is a trade deadline audition more than anything.
I can absolutely see that. I think this is the next few weeks are going to really determine what they end up doing here. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder, you get Skubal back, you get some of these other guys healthy. Could they get themselves in a position where all of a sudden, let's say they're contending, and then they somehow become buyers at the deadline? I don't know if that's the most likely thing in the entire world, where they want to end up going out and trying to give it one last legit run before Skubal ends up departing in free agency, which mm-hmm. I think we all expect at this point. It's something that I've wondered too, but I'm right there with you. When Skubal's on the mound, I expect him to be Tarik Skubal. I expect him to be out there and dominating. Could be a shorter, and they could end up trying to build him up for later on in the season. But I'm absolutely expecting big things from him. And this is the fact that he's returned after 5 weeks shows just how far that these elbow surgeries have actually come, which is just remarkable in itself.
Absolutely insane. I do want to ask you, though, to your point about the Tigers, if they want to go for it, in my eyes, at least from where I'm sitting, if it was just the Guardians again at the top of the division, I think that's more realistic. I don't think what's happening with the White Sox is fluky. I think this White Sox team is legitimately a good baseball team. And so the Tigers aren't just having to chase down the Guardians again, or like battle with the Guardians. They're playing behind two teams that, as of right now, where we are in the season, have looked like a better baseball team than they are. So like, that's where I wonder if it does kind of force the Tigers' hands, because how realistic is it that you're able to fight back? Like, and that's something you have to determine. And like, to your point, like, we're not even in the middle of June yet. So like, there is time for this stuff to still be decided. But if the Tigers stay where they are now, even with Scooble's return, even if they improve marginally, that's not going to be enough to get you into the postseason.
No, I think you're exactly correct there. And they're going to have to be realistic too, because this is something that the Angels had to weigh with Shohei Ohtani. Mm-hmm. Obviously they did not end up trading Shohei, but with a guy like Scooble, they need to evaluate, do we have a realistic chance of winning it now? Or do we have a better chance of maximizing his return now, trading him and moving on? And as of this point, they're 8 games out of that division. Obviously, they're 7-3 in the last 10, so like they're kind of getting a little bit back there. But I'm with you. The White Sox are very legit. Like, they are a team that you watch them. They're fun. They're energetic. They're youthful. Brad Montgomery, talk about an electric debut. Like, it was watching him hit that walk-off homer and watching his family and his agency just go nuts was super cool. I loved every bit of it. But
and they're doing that without Murakami too. Like, let's not forget that Murakami, who has like the top 10 OPS in baseball before he got hurt, is currently not playing, and they're still winning baseball games.
Oh, 100%. And at this point, between Murakami and everything else that they've done, Chris Getz deserves to be the executive of the year. He has done an unbelievable job in Chicago and in building that team. And it's not just for this year, it's long-term as well. Like, this is a team that's in year one of this extended window. And the Murakami deal is perhaps maybe the best of the entire offseason. Getting him for 2 years for $34 million, it was a steal. Like, we got to call it like it is. And that's exactly the kind of deal that they should have done. They did it, and now they're reaping the rewards for it. So major props to Getz in that entire front office, because they have done an absolutely wonderful job turning around that entire team. And we mentioned Shohei before. Mm-hmm. He left the game the other day. What was it? With left knee inflammation? What's your level of concern here as far as him and the Dodgers go?
Level of concern, low, generally. I know how the Dodgers operate with this, and they're going to take precautions when it comes to this stuff. Like, if he feels a minor pain, they're probably taking him out of the game, especially, again, when it's June 11th, June 12th that we're talking about here. Like, you're not going to necessarily push him to the limits. Having said that, the one thing I could see is there's been a lot made with him, you know, with him returning to the mound this year, of them like trying to protect him, you know, trying to give him that extra day off after he pitches, or sometimes just letting him pitch and not DH in those games and stuff like that. So like, they have been protective. I think we could see those measures ramp up even further, because the last thing you want, like, the Dodgers are loaded. Like, let's be clear about, like, they have the depth to withstand injuries. At the same time, when you go into the postseason, I don't think you're winning a third straight World Series if Shohei Ohtani's not a part of it. And so like, I think that we're going to see a little bit more protection mode moving forward.
No, totally. They have to be very careful with him, because this is their prized asset. He does both things at an extremely high level here. The fact that, like, any concern with or any potential nick that he's got, like, they're obviously going to exercise extreme caution here, like you said. But I don't get any sense here that this is a long term thing. This is a short term thing. This is just something that happens over the course of the major league season. But anytime that Shohei Ohtani leaves the game and is injured, that's going to draw headlines. And I woke up this morning and I had two things all over my phone. It's like, what's going on with Shohei? And talk like the SpaceX IPO. Like, it was everyone's talking about that. It's like, my Twitter is just absolutely covered in both of those things, which is pretty crazy. But Shohei gives the Dodgers the like definitive advantage over any team when it comes to winning a World Series. And it's why they've been so successful ever since they signed him. And they're not going to slow down anytime soon, as long as he's on the field. So I don't blame him one bit for being cautious, because you know what? I would be too. Like, I can't blame him whatsoever.
No, I mean, like, honestly, from that game, like, I'm more concerned about the Justin Robleski injury, because he also left that game earlier. Yeah. And like, that's more concerning to me than Ohtani, because Ohtani seems precautionary. Someone leaving the middle of a start, someone who's young in Robleski's case, like, that's more concerning, especially when you already have some rotation injuries that you're already dealing with.
No, totally. And we've been talking about them doing some different things at the deadline. Adding more pitching has to be one of their big priorities here. And this is something we've talked about with them in recent years as well, is they've been beat up by the injury bug more than many other teams. And pitching deep, like back-to-back-to-back seasons, that's going to take a toll on your pitching staff. Some of these young guys may not have been a big part of it, but overall, like, they're going to have to be very careful in adding more pitching, having more guys to cover different innings. I think would be super vital for them, so their top guys can be healthy for the postseason. So I'm right there with you. I think that's a good call by you. And one of the top pitchers who I'm hesitant to say available, but I expect to be asked about is Reed Detmers with the Los Angeles Angels. I would say of any player that I've been asked about by other teams, Detmers has probably been like the top name for me. And he's got a lot of fans across baseball. What do you think of his trade candidacy? And is there any team that you could see, you know what, being like a pretty strong fit for him?
I mean, I think his trade candidacy makes a ton of sense, like both from buyers and the Angels perspective in this too, because if you're the Angels, I mean, what are you winning right now? Like, you know, I can lament the Red Sox. The Angels are one of the teams with a worse record than the Red Sox right now. Like that's the state of affairs in Los Angeles for that team right now. Yeah. But Detmers is your typical guy at the trade deadline who is performing worse than the underlying numbers would tell you. You look at the strikeout rate. You look at the FIP. He has a 4 ERA, but a 2.89 FIP. And that's a guy that if you're a contender, you're someone who has confidence. And this all leads me to a team that I think has underperformed defensively, but I think can get there, and a team that needs starting pitching. The Chicago Cubs make a ton of sense for Reed Detmers.
Yep.
Because if you're talking about a pitcher who has a good strikeout rate and then is putting balls in good position for your defense to make plays, God, I'd like Nico Horner and Dansby Swanson behind me making those plays, Alex Bregman making those plays, PCA making those plays more than I would the Angels defense. Like, I think that if you're talking about pitching, and we've talked about the Cubs extensively, but I think that makes a ton of sense.
No, I do too. And I'm very skeptical that he's moved, because when it comes to guys like this, where he's 26, he's left-handed, he's not a free agent until 2029, that is a guy that the Angels have typically held on to and placed an extremely high asking price when it comes to trade talks. But I could absolutely see the Cubs fit. The other team that I could see being a potential fit, and this is just speculation on my end, is the Chicago White Sox. Mm-hmm. And they're a team that absolutely does need starting pitching, both now and also going forward. If you acquire a guy like Detmers, you can move Eric Fetty out of the rotation. You can end up getting you can also have him in the rotation for the long haul. But when I see Detmers pitch, and when I hear the numbers that you mentioned, he kind of feels very Brewers-y. And I mean that extremely complimentary, because anytime the Brewers evaluate a guy, or anytime that they acquire a guy, they turn to gold. I'm not saying that he's like the Brewers are going to be interested here. They got plenty of other pitching here. But that seems like the kind of guy where you could take him to the right environment, you can absolutely maximize him. And I think the Angels would really regret it. So when it comes to him and some of those other pitchers that they got on the roster, I think they probably hold on to them. And then you have like a Brent Suter, a Jorge Soler, and some of these other like guys who are on expiring contracts probably being more likely trade candidates. But Detmers is going to be asked about a ton, because we've heard plenty of buzz about Skubal, Freddie Peralta. Obviously, both of those guys are free agents at the end of the year, but the controllability and also the upside with Detmers has a ton of teams just absolutely tantalized here. So one to watch for sure. And going back to the injury bug, Cody Williams, unfortunate. Ronald Acuna Jr., second time this season back on the injured list. What's this mean for the Atlanta Braves? And are you optimistic that they're going to be able to overcome this, but also like keep that lead in the National League East with him gone?
I'm still optimistic about the Braves, because the pitching is still performing. Like, and that's the biggest thing for me. And like, speaking of candidates to like buy at the deadline, like the Braves are getting a starting pitcher, like a reliable veteran starting pitcher, just seems very Alex Anthopoulos coded. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like that's where they're headed, but the pitching has performed. And then you look at the guys in the lineup who have still continued to perform, you know, Drake Baldwin's going to be back at some time. And they survived the first Acuna injury. That's when they went on their first run, was with Acuna not on the field. So like, why would I not be confident in them being able to do that again? Because when you look at the role players in this team, you look at a guy like Mike Yastrzemski, you look at a guy like Mauricio Dubon, they perform so well in Atlanta. Like, they are in the perfect role with the Atlanta Braves to just like sustain this. And like, let's be honest, like Acuña, it hasn't been performing when healthy like Acuña to the top degree. And like, honestly, maybe get like giving him some time to actually get healthy and not rush back. If the Braves can maintain this, maybe that's the best thing for him at this point.
No, and they can be patient with him. This is why they were really adamant about adding another outfielder, because there wasn't necessarily a huge need initially for a guy like Mike Yastrzemski, but obviously everything that's happened there since opening day, or even just slightly before that, really kind of made that a priority position for them. And Anthopoulos, I'm glad you mentioned it, with a guy like Dubon, Dom Smith, and some of these other Yastrzemski as well. When it came to the offseason, Anthopoulos really prioritized obviously adding meaningful upgrades, but also adding guys who are going to fit into that clubhouse very well. It's something that he's done in years past, but I think he placed an even bigger emphasis on it this offseason, and it's really panned out because these guys are comfortable. They're enjoying themselves. Dubon's been a huge steal. Getting him from Nick Allen, great deal with between them in the Houston Astros. And Dom Smith on a minor league deal. Like, Anthopoulos is very good at identifying guys that are under the radar that he believes he can maximize. And I would expect him to continue to do that at the deadline. Maybe that comes as far as a starting pitcher, which I think he absolutely does need that for sure. You can also look at maybe another bat reliever, maybe not the most glaring need there, but I expect him to be swinging. I could even see him trying to swing big at the deadline. But one thing that I do know is that he finds value, he takes advantage of it. And usually it comes through a Twitter announcement. It's very tough to get a Brave scoop. So whenever we get them, we try to celebrate those a little bit extra for sure. And another guy that is probably going to be available, at least according to Ken Rosenthal, Lars Nootbaar. That's a guy I've talked about on the show a ton. He is a guy that the Cardinals have been pretty adamant about not moving, at least when it was John Mozeliak running the show. Chaim Bloom's now in town, and he's let go of a bunch of different guys. If you're a rival team and Lars Nootbaar is potentially out there, are you interested? Like, what are we thinking here?
I think you have to be interested. And if you're the Cardinals, I think you're in a position where you can maintain that you don't want to move Lars Nootbaar because you don't have to, but you are in a position with some of the breakouts that they've had in St. Louis this year where you can potentially do that. And you could potentially work out, like, This doesn't have to be like the trades we saw in the offseason with, you know, Wilson Contreras or Sonny Gray or Brendan Donovan. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. We could be looking at the Cardinals like soft buying here and selling someone where they have a surplus in the outfield, selling Lars Nootbaar and getting something that they need to help contend more in the Central, because they're still in the mix in the NL Central. They're not going away. Oh. Yeah. So like, the more you look at this, like, Lars Nootbaar could be an asset to help them continue, like help expedite what Chaim Bloom has already done so far in St. Louis.
No, totally. And like, he's a guy that's super valuable. And he's also, in addition to being a guy that's been very good on the field, he's also a tremendous clubhouse presence. It's someone who has been typically regarded as one of the better clubhouse guys in all of baseball. And again, like, could that be a fit for Atlanta? Could that be that's going to be a fit for so many different contending teams? He's been very popular in years past. Like, the amount of teams that have asked about him and some of these other guys have been a lot. And they've held on to these guys. Nootbaar, I can absolutely see being a candidate to go. They're still contending, but maybe you can move him elsewhere and continue to build around guys like Jordan Walker, Nolan Gorman, J.J. Weatherholt, like players like that. They have a lot of belief, especially in Walker and Weatherholt, and rightfully so. But if you can move a guy like Nootbaar, maybe improve a different aspect of your team, I think that's something that they're absolutely going to consider. And there's also at this point a shortage, or at least it could change. We're still a good ways away from the deadline, but there's a shortage of bats. So I could see some team trying to overpay for a guy like Nootbaar there for sure. But two players who are not believed to be available, and we'll close the show with this, Cody Williams, are Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo. Ken Rosenthal ended up writing that, and everything that I've heard is that they're not available at this point. Teams are going to be asking about them, but they're not willing to listen on them quite yet. J.J. Piccolo's comments to the media also kind of verified that as well. Are you surprised by this, or did you expect them to try to keep contending this year?
I'm surprised, quite frankly, because on the whole, outside of Bobby Witt, what is really working for the Kansas City Royals right now? Yeah. Because like, I understand why Wacha and Lugo would be like high end trade candidates, but like, they're also not pitching necessarily up to the level that some expected or haven't consistently done that this year. And like, that there's obvious reason why you would want them. They're veteran guys, and those guys that can come in on a contender and be a perfect fit as a number two or number three starter. Like, I think that makes complete sense for what both of these guys are. If you're the Royals, man, what do you have that's working for you? Like, I love Vinny Pascantino as much as the next guy. He has been woeful this year as an offensive player. And you just look around and like, I don't understand, if you're the Royals front office, how you look at this and think things are going to turn around with this current group. You've got to shake some things up. And like right now, they're just running back the same thing that had them coming up short last year. And it seems to be a worse version of that.
No, it totally does. And they are a team where it caught me off guard initially. It caught me off guard, but why I wasn't surprised about the fact that they're probably going to hold on to these guys is if you look at their pitching after this, they don't necessarily have a lot of guys coming up through the pipeline who can end up filling that void. And finding pitchers that you both love and also are like trust is really difficult. And as far as Lugo goes, they signed him before the deadline last year. Like, that was a decision that came down to the wire. A trade could have very easily happened, but he wanted to be in Kansas City and they wanted him to be in Kansas City. They got that multi-year deal done, and I can't see them. Like, it would be a bad faith kind of move if you trade him a year later after doing something like that. So I think that'd be really tough. And Waka, he's a guy that he's super underrated in the fact that he barely gets any national love, but yet he's been doing this for a decade plus, whether it's been with the Cardinals, whether now with the Royals. And he's been really good, dependable guy. He's signed for next year as well. And if you can have at least those two guys in there, that gives you some certainty in that rotation. They still want to contend next year as well. But this deadline, I would absolutely look at a guy like Chris Bubich, who is, I would call, likely to be moved if they're out of contention. Vinny P, I know you said he's been bad, but I would expect him to be getting some trade looks as well. Yeah. Anybody who's on expiring contracts, I believe, are going to be fair game when it comes to the Kansas City Royals. But I would be surprised if either Lugo or Waka were moved. But again, like, all it takes is one call where it's like, okay, like, we'll blow you away with an offer. We want these guys, but I don't expect that to happen. But what I do expect to happen, Cody Williams, is you to run your half marathon. You are absolutely going to crush it. I cannot wait to hear about it. You're going to dominate just like you dominated the podcast again. I cannot thank you enough for doing the show with me. So I appreciate you. Everyone who's watching the show right now, we appreciate you. Joanne, our lovely producer, we appreciate you. I will see you back here on Monday. I will be in Wisconsin. Cooper and I are doing the 27-hour drive. So pray for us. It's going to be a doozy. There's going to be a lot of Mountain Dew consumed and a lot of gas station corn dogs. So get ready for that. So if I'm hurting on Monday, you know why. But I appreciate all you guys. See you back here on Monday. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.